You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Each week, we try to bring you answers and options to raising children today to be the best they can be. And the way to do that is to be the best and most authentic person we can be. Which is why I'm thrilled to have as my guest today, Mike Robbins. Mike is the author of the new book, Be Yourself, Everyone Else is Already Taken, and the bestseller, Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. As a well-known keynote speaker and personal development expert, Mike has inspired tens of thousands through his speaking, workshops, coaching, and writing. He empowers people to be grateful, passionate, and authentic in their work, relationships, and lives. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, I got to tell you, I've been reading your book over the last week, and I'm pumped up just to have you here. One of the things is I love the title. The title alone is a great reminder for all of us. It's a reminder for us what we need to be doing out there. So,
yeah. Well, I appreciate you saying that. You know, it's funny. It's kind of ironic about the title. I love it, and it's an Oscar Wilde quote. So, you know, I jokingly say to people all the time, yeah, I know I wrote a book on authenticity, but I stole the quote for the title from someone else. But you know what happened, actually, Alan, was I was writing Focus on the Good Stuff, my first book, and whenever I'd get stuck writing, I would Google things or look for quotes or inspiration from different places, and I love inspirational quotes, and I found this quote from Oscar Wilde that isn't one of his more famous ones, although he's got a lot of really famous ones, and I just thought, oh, what a great quote. So there's a subhead, a little section, Focus on the Good Stuff, entitled Be Yourself, Everyone Else is Already Taken. And I got so much response from it, and when I would speak about it, and when I'd be doing workshops, that it sort of evolved more, and as I started to write this book on authenticity that we were going to call Focus on the Real Stuff, the quote just seemed to make the most sense in terms of the title, because that's really what it's about, is being ourselves, and in this case, we're talking about our families and our children, right? Really empowering and inspiring children to be themselves, and the best way to do that for us as parents is to be ourselves initially.
Absolutely. But tell me that, I mean, why is it so hard for people to be authentic in our culture?
Well, it's a great question. I think, you know, that's why I spend the whole first third of the book talking about that, and I think there's a lot of reasons. I think it varies for each of us, you know, and I really challenge people in the book and anyone listening right now to just take a moment to think about, you know, some of the ways we were trained as children and as teenagers and then as adults and even now in our lives. We're not necessarily encouraged to be authentic, to be ourselves. I mean, people may say to us, particularly when we're growing up, just be yourself, you know, just be yourself. But there's not a lot of models, really healthy models of that as we look around in life. And on a more personal level, because I kind of break it down and be yourself, everyone else is already taken, to some of the cultural or familial influences that make it challenging for us, both in our past and currently in our lives. But also on the personal level, we've internalized a lot of those messages, and essentially we get scared. Mm-hmm. You know, we're afraid to really speak up and be ourselves and speak our truth and go for what we want because, you know, a lot of reasons. What will people say? What if it doesn't turn out? What if people get upset or offended? You know, so there's a lot of reasons that that's the case, and unfortunately then we just reinforce that and we start to perpetuate that with our own families and our own children.
Well, and one of the questions that I have from a listener actually fits right into exactly what you're talking about. Now, this is one that comes in, and I make it a point to try to read it exactly as they write it, so bear with me. But it says, okay. I'm 15 years old, and when I try to do things that are good or say positive things about teachers or other friends, I get put down or looked at funny. How can I remain positive and still be included?
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I appreciate that, you know, 15-year-old writing in and asking that question. You know, just as you're asking me that, I did a workshop yesterday here in the Bay Area. You know, I live near San Francisco, and I had a teenager in my workshop. You know, it was mostly adults, but I had a young man who was, I think he was 17, he's a senior. And he essentially asked me very much the same question. How can I be positive? And also he was saying, how can I really be myself, you know? he's on the football team and, you know, gets made fun of. So in the same case with this person who wrote in this teenager, you know, it's tough because the culture in general and particularly for a lot of teens and in school can be, you know, be cool and do what everyone's doing, which is, you know, whatever that is. And it's, you know, it varies from generation to generation, but it's a lot of the same stuff as when we were teens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that you can start to do is just gravitate towards people where you feel safe. Now, it can be tough, again, as a teenager, and, you know, it does hurt when people make fun of you. But at some level, it's good to start to learn that early and really to realize that, ironically, some people will make fun of you when you're positive and you're happy and you're, you know, proactive in life. And it's not about being righteous about it. It's really about it being real and true. So I wish I had some quick, simple, easy answer, but it's one of those things, if you can learn that now in life, and I would just say to that person who wrote in, hopefully they're listening, as hard as it is, don't sell out on yourself and get support from other people, whether it's adults or other friends, because it's not about fighting or arguing with those people that put you down or make fun of you, but it really is about staying true. And if that's true to yourself, the last thing in the world you want to do is stop being positive because people make fun of it. Because that's one of the goals in life, is for us to be happy and fulfilled.
Right, and I couldn't agree more. And in fact, one of the conversations that I have with my own teens, and I had it just recently, where I listened to one of his friends was just ripping another one of their friends. I mean, just making fun of them and everything else. And then at a later time, when it was just that particular son who was present for that and myself in the car, and I said, do you think about what that person says when you're not around?
Yeah.
You know, so, but it goes along with what you're saying. Maybe,
maybe
that person isn't the good friend that you think they are, or at least, at least when you're not there, because obviously this other person that when you guys are all together, you know, he treats him like a friend. So I think your advice really is right on target, is they need to start thinking about those things now.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things for all of us, and, you know, now Alan, you work with young people with teens and have family of your own?
Yes. Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and people listening, obviously, you know, Answers for the Family, that's what we're looking for. And I find, look, my wife and I, Michelle and I, have two small girls, 3.5-year-old Samantha and 1-year-old Anna Rose. And, you know, like most people, we love our girls, we love it, and it's challenging. It's really hard for us at times to figure it out, to balance life, to figure out our relationship, to, you know, focus on our girls and, you know, me focus on my work and us try to figure out how to raise. I mean, all these things, you know, it's a lot easier to parent in theory than it is to do it in reality, you know. There's a great book, I can't even remember who wrote it, but it's by a woman. She said, I was a great mom until I had kids. And I think that really sums it up. You know, I thought this, or another buddy of mine wants to write a book called The Pollyanna Parent Myth, meaning, you know, the kind of parent you think you're going to be and then the kind of parent you actually are.
Right.
So I just think it's important for us as families, as parents, whether we're new parents like me and my wife, or we've been parenting for a while, or even people who may be listening who have older kids or grown kids or maybe thinking about having a family, you know, it's an ongoing learning opportunity. I think it's one of the greatest personal growth journeys of all time to be a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the issues that we struggle with in parenting, and this relates to life as well, but it's so heightened as parents, is we spend so much time pretending like we know what we're doing, when how the heck are we supposed to know what to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just, I mean, again, even if you've been doing it for 15 or 20 years, especially with your oldest, I find this with my 3.5-year-old, for the rest of our lives as parents, she's always going to be our first, and we're always going to go through new phases and experiences with her.
Right.
And I was actually doing a radio interview a couple months ago on a station here in San Francisco called KFOG, and the host who was interviewing me said a great thing off the air, that Stephen Covey had told him at one point, and they were doing an interview about parenting, and Stephen said to him, you know, Stephen wrote the, you know, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and he said to him, you know, with your son, and this man who was interviewing me, his son is his oldest, he said, sometimes, you know, just be honest with him if you don't know what to do, and say, listen, I've never had a 9-year-old son or a 12-year-old son or wherever you are, and, you know, he told me that was one of the best pieces of parenting advice he got, because he would say that to his son sometimes, like, hey, you know what? I've never done this before, man. I'm doing the best I can. Like, not like a cop-out or something weird, but just honest and authentic. Part of the reason our kids aren't as honest and authentic as we want them to be is because we're not with them.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. When we say authentic, I mean, give us what your specific meaning is so that everybody out there understands.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I preface it by saying, you know, authenticity is something that's kind of tough to define because it's about being unique. It's about being real. It's about being honest. So, you know, I can't define it for you, specifically for you. You got to define that for yourself or anybody listening. And it evolves and changes. That being said, my definition and the way I talk about it in Be Yourself, Everyone Else Has Already Taken, or whenever I'm speaking about it or teaching or doing workshops, is it's really about being vulnerable, transparent, and real. So it's not always pretty. And sometimes it's actually uncomfortable. As I say all the time to people, listen, it is a lot easier in life to be phony than it is to be real a lot, because being real takes some courage, takes some responsibility. You know, I had a guy in one of my workshops recently, Alan, stand up and say to me, "You can't just go around being authentic all the time, man." He was like mad, you know. I said, "Okay, why not?" He said, "Well, because, you know, there's consequences to that." And I said, "You're absolutely right. Yeah. Absolutely. There are consequences for sure. If you're authentic in life, you say what you really feel, you go for what you want. There are people that won't like it. They won't agree with it. In fact, you might offend and upset people at times. Well, that's not the intention. That may happen. But there's also major consequences to being inauthentic. And most of us in our lives, in our families, in our relationships, in our work, we're not dealing with the consequence called, I'm being too authentic and it's a problem.
Right.
We're usually dealing with the consequence called, I'm not really speaking up, I'm not really acting in a way that's true to myself fully, and therefore I'm dealing with the consequences of that. So my work is really all about, whether again we're talking about families or anything else, it's about being a choice, because we have a choice. People say things to me all the time, I can't be honest with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talk to teenagers saying, I can't really tell my dad how I feel, or I can't really tell my wife what I think. Well, you could. You know, I had another young person yesterday come up to me and tell me that she was afraid to tell her mother that she was going to a different church. Like, they're very Catholic, right? And her mm-hmm. mom's very Catholic, and they're supposed to, you know, they go to this Catholic church, but this girl goes to this other church where I was actually doing this workshop on her own. She's 17, you know, she has her own car. She, like, sneaks away to go to church. And I said to her, I can't tell my mom. She'd get very upset. I go back, and then we go to the Catholic church together, and she thinks I'm off doing something else. And I said, wow, you know, listen, I'm not going to advocate one way or the other. I mean, my belief is just the more you can be honest, the better it is, the more you'll be freed up. I'm not going to preach to you and tell you got to tell your mom or whatever. But the reality is it's your choice. You're choosing to lie to your mother, and that has an impact. And then you could choose to tell her the truth, and that would have an impact too. But at some point, and I know you're only 17, you're going to have to grow up and figure out, I get to choose. But she was trying to tell me my mom wouldn't understand. And I said, well,
give
you don't know
chance.
That until you have
give
the conversation.
Right. Give her a chance.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well,
exactly.
And I think, too, that, I mean, if you think about the people that you truly respect the most, and I think we all have a certain amount of people that those are the ones that we will turn to in those times to where we want the truth.
Absolutely.
You know, but those are the ones you respect the most.
Oh, for sure. And look, it's tough. I mean, I'm not, look, this stuff can hurt sometimes. You know, let's be honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great saying, and I think it comes right out of the Bible, right? The truth will set you free. But then Gloria Steinem had a great take on that in the 70s. She made this quote kind of popular and famous. She said, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. And that is true. You know, but the thing about it, right, the people you respect the most, the people you really want to have in your life, it's not people that are going to be critical and negative and nasty. That's different. That's a whole different phenomenon. The people who are going to look you in the eye and tell you the truth, both in terms of, like, they believe in you and here's what you do and, you know what I mean, to pump you up, acknowledge you. That's what my whole first book, Focus on the Good Stuff, is about. But also the kind of people that are going to tell you, hey, listen, man, you got your head up your butt. What are you doing? You know what I mean? Like, when that's true, at least from their perspective, they're willing to tell you. Because so often in life, we're so busy trying to manage other people's feelings. Right? We're trying to, and this happens, look, even in parenting, and I struggle with this as a parent myself. Now, my girls are really young, so it's got to be age appropriate. But I think for good intentions, a lot of us as parents these days are doing our children a disservice, from my opinion, in the sense that, look, I'm all about love and appreciation and unconditional love of our children and really letting them know how wonderful and beautiful and amazing they are. And at the same time, and we've started to see this with our older daughter, because we weren't prepared for, oh, wow, we have to discipline her. Oh, wow, we have to set some rules and boundaries. And as we started to get into the twos with her, and again, we're in the early stages. I'm sure it continues on, especially we get to teenage years. We weren't doing a very good job of being really clear and straight with her because we were so afraid to hurt her feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think many of us were hurt as children, and maybe raised by our parents or our grandparents, and, you know, God bless them, they did the best they could. Not a lot of awareness about self-esteem, not a lot of awareness about really nurturing, you know, culturally speaking, if you will. But I think the pendulum in a lot of cases has swung back the opposite direction, and now it's like we're having long conversations with our 2 and 3 year olds. How do you feel? What do you want? What do you think? Which can be wonderful, but at the same time, we've got to be straight and clear with them, because otherwise they get scared.
That's right.
They don't know what the rules are. They don't know, you know what I mean? And it can be a bit of a paradox, as I talk about authenticity, because we don't want the rules to be so rigid that these kids grow up with these fixed ideas about how life works. But that's what makes parenting both exciting, I think, and also incredibly challenging.
Right, and I agree. And what I hear, that you're not advocating that people be blunt and brutally honest all the time.
No, not at all. But to be a choice about it and to realize, again, we're talking about this in the context of parenting. Now, age appropriateness understood. I think we actually withhold a lot of important information from our children that would benefit them. I mean, again, I just think about how I was raised. And, you know, it wasn't as though, look, I mean, my folks split up when I was 3. My mom raised me and my older sister as a single mom. But my mom grew up, you know, in the 40s as, you know, Irish Catholic from Rhode Island. You didn't talk about stuff. You didn't talk about how you felt about certain things. My mom really broke out of that mold, but there was still a lot of ideas about not talking about money and not talking about religion and not talking about sex and, you know, these things that I then didn't learn.
Right.
And I didn't have a father around, so I didn't get that stuff. And a lot of times we try to protect our kids. Now, it's not as though we want to, like, fight in front of them and have inappropriate conversations when they're too young, but I think sharing with them what's really going on, particularly right now, families are dealing with a lot of stress, financial stress and otherwise. And you try to hide that stuff from your kids, it's ridiculous. They pick up on it anyway. You don't need to sit down and, like, do the books with your children if they're 5 years old. That would be kind of ridiculous. But it's okay to talk about what's going on and, hey, daddy's a little stressed, or right now mommy's not working, or whatever's going on, so that we include the children and actually treat them in an emotionally responsible way, not just avoiding all kinds of things, thinking we're going to harm them. But I think we do more harm than good by withholding things from them and not being honest and open and vulnerable with them.
Right. Well, a little bit about what I got out of the book was that you are saying to be very, very authentic, but at the same time, there's so much positive that you can focus on. So even in the situation of, you know what, we're a little short this month and so on and so forth, but guess what? We're going to, and I'll throw out a little bit of my Northern California knowledge. We're going to Stallstaff Park. Okay, you know, we're going to go to Stallstaff Park, and we're going to have a great time. We're going to bring the dog and the balls, and we're going to do all of this stuff and things like that. So there's still so many things you can talk about and still focus on the positive.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, the context of all of my work that I've been doing for the last 10 years is really steeped in the principles of gratitude and appreciation. I mean, that's, again, what Focus on the Good Stuff, my first book, was all about. And again, it's really just about being real, because a lot of us, though, in the kind of positivity movement, if we can even call it that, of really wanting, you know, those of us that understand and really get it's important for us to focus on the good stuff, it's important for us to be grateful as much as possible, even in the midst of challenges, that is absolutely true. I mean, there's scientific research now that proves the impact of gratitude on our health, our well-being, our happiness and fulfillment. I mean, it's sort of indisputable, and we all know it even just anecdotally that we feel better when we're focusing on what we're grateful for. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we got to be careful with that, because I meet a lot of people who I say, how's it going? Oh, it's great, it's wonderful, everything's fantastic, and there's like, it's like fake, you know what I mean? So it's just got to be real. We got to keep it real, and so when we go to that deeper level, what I call in the book, in the chapter on Express Yourself, you know, I use the metaphor of the iceberg, below the waterline, down into the depths of who we really are, the vulnerable, transparent, real us that we often don't share with other people. Now, there's not just bad, awful, terrible things down there. There are some challenging things. There's some painful stuff. But there's also some really wonderful, beautiful, incredible stuff. And our ability to express ourselves and really be honest and confront our lives in a genuine way, both the light and the dark, actually gives us access to more of everything. So, as weird as it seems, the ability, Alan, for us to be able to express our anger and fear and, you know, sadness actually opens us up to fully express our gratitude and love and joy. And in fact, we can more consciously do it if we're able to express that. And children are great models of this. They don't have the conscious awareness of it when they're two, three, four, five, 6 years old, but they have the emotional awareness too, right? They get upset, they cry, they throw a fit, even though it might drive us crazy as parents. And then they're over it because they get it out. But what happens as we start to grow older, and we learn this from our parents, and as parents, we start teaching this to our kids because it's hard to deal with and manage the behavior, and we're out in public and they throw a fit at the grocery store, we don't actually encourage the expression of emotions. We want them to just be happy, put a smile on your face, cheer up, you know, because that's easier to deal with, right?
Right.
Well, what if we gave them more permission in a healthy way to get their, as we call it in our house, get your mad out, get your sad out, really get it out. Get down on the floor with Samantha when she gets upset and really throw a fit with her. Let her really get it out so that she's not hanging on to that stuff and doesn't grow up with the idea that when I get angry, I have to suppress it. Because you know what that turns into when we get old? Is drinking, is drugs, is all kinds of other unhealthy behaviors, is raging against, you know, road rage or yelling at our spouse because we're upset about something at work and we don't have the freedom to express it at work. So what if we could raise our children emotionally healthy? So that, of course, then if they're able to express that more, quote, bad stuff that we call it, they'll actually have more freedom to express the good stuff.
Right. And rather than saying, and at least going back from my generation, you know, come on now, boys don't cry, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so, you know, we're bottling all this up. And I know with a family that I was working with that had a boy 11 years old who had mild Asperger's. And he would have these temper tantrums and stuff, and same type of thing. He'd be in a store, wherever they happened to be, and the parents would just freak. You know, they didn't know what to do. And what we did is we put a heavy bag in their house.
Nice.
And we set it up in the garage, and we talked to him, and we told him, when think about what you start to feel inside when this comes up. You know, look at the fact that your skin tone is actually changing, or you're starting to feel beads of sweat on your forehead. When all these things start to go for the heavy bag, get it all out so that you don't take it out on somebody else. You don't. One of the issues we were dealing with was he had an 8-year-old little brother, and if he was around, he got the brunt of it. So I couldn't agree more that just give them some sort of a release to get it out. And as it turned out, I mean, this boy made huge gains in how he dealt with his emotions just because he had a release.
Yeah. It's so great. I mean, and you know, Al, I mean, you've worked for so many years with teens and with young people of all kinds, you know, and knowing and seeing when you just give them that place to express themselves. You know, and I think, you know, whether we're talking small children, obviously that's what I have at my house, but when I go and work with teens, one of the things I find, and this can be tough because people ask me all the time about their teenagers, and, you know, I don't have the experience of having my own teens yet. Of course, I will in a few years, and
It'll get here faster than you can imagine.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, as everyone tells me. You know, and, of course, I'll have two teenage daughters and a wife going through menopause all at the same time. It should be interesting at my house when we get there.
Yeah, but, I'll give you my cell number so you can call.
Yeah, please do. I may need it. You know, but I think about it. There's an organization that you may be familiar with, and many people listening may be familiar with, called Challenge Day. Mm-hmm. Some friends and mentors of mine, Rich and Yvonne Dutre St. John, started this organization, and I've known them and been friends with them for a number of years. Actually was on the board of Challenge Day for a while myself, and they do programs all over the country and even in Canada and around the world with middle school and high school students. And it's a day-long, very intense, emotional workshop. And there's adults in there too, parents and counselors and teachers and, you know, administrators and such. The exercise in the book that I talk about in that same chapter when I'm talking about the iceberg and, you know, expressing yourself, I got that from Rich and Yvonne from Challenge Day, and the exercise goes like this, and you can do it, you know, I've seen it done with teenagers, incredibly powerful. I do it all the time. I did it in my workshop yesterday. I do it with my corporate groups I work with, lots of different places, but have people sit around in a circle, and one person at a time in the circle has a minute, minute and a half to just repeat the phrase, if you really knew me, you'd know this about me. And the idea, again, it's no pressure, there's no expectation, you have to, you know, say anything you don't want to say, but the invitation is to lower that waterline and expose a little more of yourself, honestly, vulnerably, genuinely. What's amazing that happens, and I see this happen, and I love to do this actually with teens, especially when I have groups of when there's teens and adults in the same group, because as we start to get real and really express who we are, what's amazing is we're so much more alike than we're different, even if someone in the group is 70 years old and someone's 15, or there's a, you know, 45-year-old African-American woman and, you know, 60-year-old Caucasian man and a 25-year-old Latina woman. You know what I mean? It's just right. like, it just, the barriers come down, and all of a sudden, now, you know, my story is different than your story is different than the next person's. We don't have the same details. But the pain and the joy, the excitement and the fear of being human is pretty universal.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us, and this is the thing with teenagers that's so eye-opening a lot of times, is they think, because you know this, and you know this better than I do, but teens are walking around with so much intense emotion, not knowing what the heck to do with it, and thinking there's something wrong with them for feeling that way.
Right.
Not knowing that, oh, everybody else feels that way, or definitely at least they did when they were teens, you know? But if we can actually, that's the thing about, you know, as parents of teenagers, I say all the time, people ask me, how do I get my teens to be more grateful and appreciative? How do I get my teens to be more authentic and or responsible? All these things. And I say to them, listen, I don't know with yours. I can't tell you specifically because it's unique. But here's a couple things I can tell you. Number one, the most important thing you can do is model it yourself.
Right.
So whatever you want, you know, it's the Gandhi principle, right? Be the change.
Yeah.
You want your kids to be more grateful and appreciative? You want them to be more authentic? Ask yourself how grateful and appreciative or authentic and real you're being at home with your spouse, with your kids, just in general. Do you go to the family gatherings, act all nice, and then get in the car and gossip about everybody that's there? Your teens, of course, pick up on that, not only do your little kids, but it's amazing, right? And then at the same time, people say, well, my 15-year-old just listens to his iPod all day and he doesn't really talk to me and yada yada, you know. And I'm like, okay, well, are you listening to him?
Right.
Are you really getting in his world? Instead of just telling him, as my mom, who did the best she could, but had no idea how to raise a 15-year-old son when it's just the two of us in the house when my sister went to college. Mm-hmm. And she, like, wanted to talk to me about what was going on at school and the girls. And I didn't want to talk to my mom. You know, but instead of my mom understanding that or trying to listen in a different way, my mom got mad and upset and got her feelings hurt, which I can understand now looking back, but it didn't support me as a teenage boy. And I know she loved me. That wasn't the issue. It was just we didn't relate to each other in those years because my mom spent a lot of time judging me and criticizing me subtly, and I wasn't interested in that. So, you know, again, this is tricky stuff, and easier said, way easier for me to give people advice about their kids than I'm sure it'll be for me to deal with my own.
Right, but the one thing that you have that you're mentioning right now that makes it a lot easier is that you have a memory. So many
yeah.
times with the parents, and I go, think about what you did.
Yeah.
You know, come on. You know, and I think that's one of the things that's helped, like, for instance, for me and my sons, having two teenagers. There are times in which, you know, we'll laugh about the fact of, you know, I'll make fun about the fact, and, you know, I was a room dad all the way through fifth grade, and then when sixth yeah. grade started, and they were like, Dad, can you not be here all the time? You know?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, then it was like, oh, I understand you don't want the dumb old white guy around, you know, and,
yeah.
you know, I guess when the gray hair comes in, you don't want me, you know, and, but just teasing them and just, you know, getting them to think about the fact that it is just a joke and I understand it and my feelings aren't hurt, you know, so that,
sure.
so that they can feel comfortable saying those things, you know, that I'm not brooding about it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and the thing is, that's great, Alan, for you. And again, for everybody listening, look, I think it's really important, and I have so much more empathy, compassion, awareness, of course, about parenting now as a parent than I did before I had my own kids. And I think that what we aren't prepared for as parents, again, whether we're new at it like I am or we've been doing it for a while, is, you know, the impact on our lives, the impact on our relationship, the impact on everything. I mean, there's a Susan Jeffers, who I love, who wrote that great book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote a fantastic book on parenting called I'm Okay, You're a Brat. And the thing I loved about her book is it wasn't at all whining and complaining about being a parent, but it was this really authentic exploration of how intensely challenging it is, particularly in the early years. So that's part of why I read it as a new parent. But I think what happens, though, for us in our lives is as we grow in our parenting, and I've seen this from people and parenting mentors I have in talking to them, you start to integrate it more as your kids get a little older and you start to relax into the idea, yes, I'm a parent, and now this becomes part of life. But what we can often stop doing, like you said, a lot of parents forget about the memory
mm-hmm.
of their own, you know, adolescence or whatever. We also forget to keep learning and growing ourselves because you get into that role of being a teacher, which we are as parents. And I know this even in my work, and you can probably relate to this in your mm-hmm. work too. When you start teaching other people, there's a tendency to get caught up in your own teaching and forget to continue to be learning.
Yep.
So, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like today's transformation is tomorrow's ego trip. So, right, we have some insight and awareness, or we get some knowledge about something, that to our kids, we are the gods and goddesses of their world. We're the most important, especially when they're young. We know everything. Then probably get to a point where they think we're idiots and we don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of it is we got to keep growing and learning ourselves and keep evolving ourselves. That's going to make us even better parents.
Yep. And let me share a quick story about that, because you are going to go through this. When one of my sons was 5 years old, and he said, he kept asking me questions and I was answering him, and he goes, "Wow, Dad, you know everything, don't you?" And I said, "Hold that thought." And I asked my wife, I said, "Go get the video camera." And
exactly.
She got the video camera, put the video camera on us. And I said, "Now, what were you saying?" And he goes, "Wow, Dad, you know everything, don't you?" And I go, "As far as you know." And we videotaped it. And she said, "Why was it so important to videotape that?" And I said, "Well, because when he's 15 and I know absolutely nothing, I want to play the tape for him and go, do you think it could be somewhere in the middle?"
Yeah. Well, and that's so great. I mean, you're good. You know, good of you to have that awareness at five. And, you know, I can imagine, again, emotionally for all of us to go through the ups and downs. You know, Michelle, my wife, and I will sit and talk. And, you know, as it is for many of us when we first start out with this, it's so intense. And I think, wow, I can understand why parents often have a lot of resentment towards their kids, which, again, that doesn't get talked about very authentically.
Right.
You know, and again, it's not, look, I was leading a workshop one day, and in the middle of the exercise, if you really knew me, I always go first whenever I do that, because I figure, mm-hmm. hey, if I'm not going to model it and go there myself, I can't expect people in my workshop or when I'm doing a speech about it or whatever to go there. And what came up for me, and I don't plan, but I just whatever, like, what came up for me that particular day specifically, there have been some challenges. I said, if you really knew me, you'd know that oftentimes I really resent my girls, and I resent being a parent, and I just resent it. I get frustrated. I get angry. I just wish sometimes that Michelle and I were just us again, because, man, we were having fun, you know, whatever. I just said it,
right.
And it was like people were aghast.
Yeah.
You know, like, I said the thing you're never supposed to say. Now, I know in my heart, I would do anything for my girls. It has nothing to do with me not loving my girls. And I actually think if we're more comfortable with expressing and dealing with that, that's not something we say to our children necessarily.
Right.
Boy, I really resent you. But part of the thing, and one of a lot of the issues that come up in parenting, is that we don't deal with our own frustration, our own resentment, the stuff that they trigger in us. We make it be about them, right? What's wrong with my 15-year-old? What's wrong with my 13-year-old? Why is she so disrespectful? Blah, blah, right? Well, okay, that may be true, and we got something to deal with them, but what's up with us?
Right.
That we're not dealing with ourselves. And someone said to me recently about this that, you know, you may know this, but it was such an enlightening piece of feedback. They said, Mike, every stage your kids go through, you will deal with whatever you did not deal with in your own life when you were at that stage. Now, it's hard when they're so young and, like, pre-verbal or, you know, very young, in like my girls, because you don't even remember that. So the stuff you're getting triggered by now when your daughter's two or when she's, you know, 8 months, or you don't even have conscious memory of that. Now, as they start to get older, 10, 12, 15, 17, you will have some memory of it, and it can be really challenging at those
right.
times. You know, but again, what if we could take it on like that and really look at our children? And I do this to the best of my ability, even though I forget it at times, that, like, there are teachers, there are spiritual advisors here on the planet to teach us ways to be more patient, more loving, more kind, sometimes maybe to be more straightforward and even forceful. Michelle and I have had to learn more of that than we thought, whatever it is. But that they show up with their own unique set of everything, as much of an influence as we are.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things Susan Jeffers talks about in that great book, she said there's a sphere of influence. And, you know, if you have kids that are really problem kids, get off your own back. It's not all your fault. It's a combination of things. And if you have really wonderful kids,
don't take
yourself,
all the credit.
It's really not all about, you know, it's just not all about you. There's a lot of factors, because you probably see that with your two kids. There are many times kids will grow up, same gender kids, a year or two apart in the same house, and turn out way different.
Completely.
So it's impossible that it can simply just be the nurturing. It's got to be some of nature as well as other outside influences that we can't even fully understand as human beings, and why people turn out the way they do.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I've said many times to parents that when we're dealing with them, they go, "I don't understand what I did wrong. My first one's going to Harvard. My second one's doing this, and I don't know why this one's on drugs. What did I do wrong?" And I go, you know, maybe they're just wired that way. You know, so don't.
Yeah,
like you said, don't take too much credit when it's great, and don't take too much fault when it's not. You know, one of the things I want to take a break, but as I was going through your book, I noticed that you had something where you lay out five principles of authenticity.
Yes.
Okay, I want to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask Mike to discuss with us those five principles. We'll be right back in 1 minute.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
We're back with Mike Robbins, and his book is Be Yourself. Everyone else is already taken. So, Mike, tell us a little bit about the five principles of authenticity that is in your book.
Well, you know, the first third of the book, as I was talking about, is all about why it's difficult to be authentic. And all that, although that's not one of the principles, that's a core piece to first engage in. So we got to take a look at, again, what makes it difficult, challenging for us to be authentic. If we can tell the truth about that with some empathy and compassion for ourselves, then we actually have access to being more real and authentic. And when we get into the principles, the first one is to know yourself. Now, you know, it's a lot easier said than done in some ways.
Right.
Because it's ongoing. It's lifelong. It's, as we were talking about before the break, as for us as parents, to continue to grow, to continue to learn. You know, and it's really taking a deep look at ourselves. That's kind of what it means to know ourselves. And the second one is to transform your fear. And this is a big one because fear often gets a bad rap in that, you know, we shouldn't get scared, and you know, the whole thing you and I were talking about before the break, boys don't cry, and, you know, especially us as men, I don't get scared, I'm tough, I'm strong. One of the best things we can teach our kids, by the way, is how to deal with their fear, which is to, in my opinion, to really embrace it, to move through it, lean into it, admit it, own it, communicate it, express it, because like any other emotion, if we actually express it genuinely, we'll move past it.
Right.
So, you know, taking risk, doing things that scare us, admitting that we're scared, and doing it anyway. You know, I keep mentioning Susan Jeffers because I really love her book and her work, her books and her work, but that Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway book is such a great reminder. And that relates to the third principle, which I've been talking a bit about, express yourself. You know, again, the metaphor being that of the iceberg, to really lower the waterline, express more of who we are, the good ones, the bad ones, the all of them, you know. And I actually think it'd be great if we could start relating to emotions differently, not good ones being happy, joy, excitement, and bad ones being anger, shame, you know, fear, sadness, but more thinking of it as positive and negative. Positive being ones that we express fully,
right.
Negative ones being ones we don't express. Because even, quote, negative emotions, sadness, anger, that gets expressed in a healthy way, incredibly powerful, as you know, and you're incredibly
sure.
Positive when we can express it. Even positive emotions, love, appreciation, I know this in all my work on appreciation, when we don't express our appreciation, it can become negative, and we end up like, look, when you get in an argument with your spouse, it's not that you don't love or appreciate them, it's just you're not expressing that.
Mm-hmm.
You're expressing irritation and frustration,
right.
And that's what you're focused on. So it's not a matter of the emotion itself being the problem, it's really the expression or lack thereof. The
yeah.
Fourth principle is being bold. And, you know, being bold is something, how do we teach our kids to be bold? Well, we model it. We show them what boldness means. And boldness doesn't just mean big, huge things.
Right.
It means finding our edge and being able to push past it, right?
Right. And it doesn't have to be brutal.
No, not at all. You know, again, I say to people all the time, listen, bold, you know, bold is like, could be climbing Mount Everest, but that's like an ego thing. Oh, I'm going to go do some humongous, you know, very few people are going to do that. But bold could also simply be asking for a favor, you know, saying no. teaching our kids how to say no, genuinely, compassionately. Look, this is really, I mean, I have girls.
Yeah.
It's important to teach them to really own their no. For boys, too, but meaning that, like, it's okay to say no. Like, that teenager that emailed in earlier and said, gosh, you know, people make fun of me because I, you know, I'm positive or acknowledge a teacher. You know, without it being an argument or a big confrontation, to really empower that teen to be able to say, you know what, this is important. This matters to me. I'm standing up for this, whatever it is, whether it's an injustice or it's like, this is something positive I'm going to do. And, like, if you don't want to do that or you don't like that, okay, that's fine. You're entitled to that opinion, but, like, I'm still going to do this.
Right, and don't try to put me down for having my opinion.
Exactly. And, again, the best way we can teach our kids to do any of this stuff is not to lecture them, is to show them.
Right.
Model that. You know, and even be willing to, you know, show them an example of what that looks like. And I think it's so important because they learn, you know, kids learn that way. My aunt told me this great story a couple years ago that stuck with me. This was before I had kids, but she said, you know, I have two cousins, that my aunt's daughters, and they're about my age and my sister's age. So she said, you know, Mike, when my girls got to be in their early 20s, I couldn't figure out why they weren't doing a very good job taking care of themselves. And I really started to worry about them, and I was concerned, and I was sort of frustrated. And I, you know, as you and I were talking about earlier, she was doing the thing like, what did I do wrong as a mom? I don't understand. And as she was really looking at herself and thinking, you know, gosh, she thought of all the things she did for her girls and everything she provided and all the love and support and care and all that. And finally it hit her. Wow, I wasn't taking very good care of myself all those years.
There you go.
And that's what my girls saw. So my girls never saw what it looked like for a grown woman to take care of herself. And she said, and then it made sense to me why they weren't doing such a good job. They didn't have the model. It wasn't a function of me not loving them. It wasn't a function of me not providing for them. It wasn't a function of any of that. It just was why I didn't give them the model. And that actually relates to the fifth and final principle, which is celebrate who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is one of the toughest ones for us in general, and especially, I think, for parents. Maybe even more specifically for mothers, although I know fathers, we struggle with it as well. But I'll tell you what, Alan, I got the best piece of parenting advice I ever got. May have been one of the best pieces of advice I got for life right before my now 3.5-year-old Samantha was born. You know, you get a lot of unsolicited advice when you're about to have children, right?
Yeah.
And one of my mentors, you know, with all the advice, he said something to me that just rocked my world. He said, listen, Mike, you got two main jobs with your daughter. He said, the first one is a really big one, but it's easier than the second one. The first one is, you know, teach her how to be in the world. Teach her how to tie her shoes and blow her nose and cross the street and say please and thank you and all that stuff, man. He's like, you'll screw it up a bunch, especially with your first, and it'll take you a long time, but that's a really important job. He said, but that's not even the most important one. The most important job you have is to teach her how to love herself.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, man. No one had said that to me. I hadn't heard that. And I said, how do I do that? He said, you love yourself, and you let her see that. That's how you teach her how to love herself.
That's great advice. And that may actually be the answer to the second listener question that we had come in. I just looked at the question, and I thought, wow, I think that's the same answer.
Perfect.
This one says, as a parent of two teens and one tween, how can I persuade them to be themselves and not follow the latest fads?
Yeah, well, whew, tough. I mean, again, I think it does go back to really modeling the self-love, the self-appreciation. And, you know, and at the same time, I think, understand, this goes back to the thing you were talking about earlier about people forgetting about what it was like as a teenager. You know, to teenagers, we've got to get back in touch with our own inner adolescent, so to speak. Like, what is it like to be a teenager? Well, the fads and what's popular and what's cool is so important.
Right.
So some of that is totally normal and healthy and developmental. It's part of the process.
And then add in raging hormones.
Exactly. And then you got, you know, but the thing is, what we often do is like fighting against, you know, the nature of how it is instead of just appreciating it and understanding it. You know what I mean? It's an interesting dance in life. And all of us, I think, so with our teens, I think, again, we sort of can overreact and flip out. But if you go back to that piece about the most important thing we can teach them is to love themselves, and the way we do that is by loving ourselves and letting them see that. Lecturing them and explaining stuff to them doesn't really work. Now, I do think it's important to have really clear rules and guidelines and agreements and expectations, you know what I mean? So as it relates to what they wear and, you know, and listen, I mean, I am not some, I mean, maybe I'll become more as my girls get older, but I don't consider myself some, you know, reactionary conservative. You know, that's not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's not my way of looking at the world. But I just think it's really important for kids, little kids and teenagers, to just know here are the rules of the game and to be really clear about those things. And from that perspective, also to really listen to where they're coming from and what it's about. You know, but underneath all of it, the biggest issue that most teens are dealing with, just like most adults are dealing with, is a lack of self-love and self-appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
So what we can do to encourage that is the best thing that we can do for them. And also to give them some space. You know, let them be teenagers. Be into the things that are popular. And then if they become problematic, if they're spending too much time on Facebook or MySpace, or they're spending too much time texting, or they're spending too much time listening to their iPod or playing video games or whatever, just make some rules about it
right.
and stick to them, you know?
Right. And there's a great story out there of, and I think it's flown over the internet a little bit, but it has to do with a girl that sends a message into her parents that says that, you know, the school's burned down, but don't worry. I was able to get some of my clothes out, and now I'm staying with my boyfriend, and which actually is working out well because I'm pregnant by him anyway, and so on, and is telling this whole story, and then stops and says, I just made all that up. None of that's really happening. I just want to let you know I got a D in algebra. You know. So when we're thinking about what's going on with our kids and how long their hair is, or if they're listening to an iPod, or they're doing all these things. Look at the bigger picture, you know?
Absolutely. Well, and that's, you know, I so agree, Alan. And I think, look, I mean, in some ways, one of the curses, and it's funny to even call it a curse, that many parents have is having pretty good kids. Because when you have pretty good kids, and sometimes even great kids, you know, the little things that they do can get overreacted to, mm-hmm. if you will. Now, you know, everything can be important and everything can be learning opportunities, but sometimes I'll listen to parents of teenagers tell me stories about things. And I want to say to them, and sometimes I even do, listen, with all due respect, you got to just chill out and relax and get off their back.
Yeah.
You know, you got a good kid who's just doing their thing. I mean, look, if you were telling me he's not coming home, he's doing crazy stuff, he's using drugs all the time, now we're talking about some serious stuff.
Right.
So let's have a different conversation. But now we're talking about little this and little that, and like, you know, we got to keep it in perspective. And I do think what happens, though, again, so many parents, and this is one of those hard truths, and we got to look in the mirror, and all of us deal with this to some degree. We're living our lives through our kids at times, and we're also taking, as we talked about earlier, too much blame and too much credit. At some level, now look, this is easier said than done, and I keep realizing this every day I step down the path of parenting, but our kids do not belong to us. They come through us. It's our job to teach them and train them and love them and support them. But especially as they start getting into the teen years, our job is to really start to let go so that as they become young adults, we're not going through freaking out, empty nest, oh my God, and then, you know, inappropriately in our 25-year-old, 30-year-old, 40-year-old children's lives. Because that stuff happens all the time. And I have lots of friends. I'm 35. I have lots of friends whose parents are still way in their lives, and in my opinion, inappropriate ways. And I'm just like, what the hell happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And we all got to take a look. And again, this is not a criticism or judgment, but it's just the more real we can get in our own lives as parents about how we are and where we struggle and stop trying to pretend and impress our friends with how good of parents we are and what we know. Look, Michelle and I spend a lot of time with our friends, not whining and complaining, but just going, man, what the hell do we do about this? I don't know about that. I wasn't prepared for this. What are you guys doing? And talking about it, the real stuff, the financial stuff, the other uncomfortable things, the discipline stuff, the whatever. And as you get older, the kids get older, you know, the more serious sex and drugs kind of conversations. But we're so afraid that people will judge us. Or what if they knew Johnny got caught with marijuana? It's like, well, he did.
Right.
What are you going to do about it? You know?
Right. Well, and you just touched on a great component to being real. Is you can't be real if you're not willing to ask the questions. And if you don't ask the questions, you're not going to learn what you need to know. I mean, it's a great point. Let's see if we can close on that point, because I just looked at the clock. I can't believe we have run out of time. So, but there's a couple of things that I want to do. One is I want to ask you, like I said, I'm reading this book now. Everybody that's listening, I am reading Be Yourself, everyone else has taken. I am reading it right now. It's incredible. I think everybody should read it. So first of all, if you can tell people where they can, you know, where they can get it. And also, I mean, with your coaching and stuff, if anybody has additional questions or they want to get a hold of you for anything else,
yeah,
tell us how they can do that.
Well, I appreciate you asking me. I mean, the book you can get in many bookstores. The easiest place to get it is online at beyourselfbook.com. And in terms of, you know, you can get in touch with me there, but my main website is mike-robbins.com. That's M-I-K-E hyphen R-O-B-B-I-N-S.com. People can get in touch with me. They can sign up for my free weekly email newsletter and also find out where I'll be speaking around the country and stuff like that. So
that would be great. Mike, thank you. Also, the next book I want to read is the Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. I got more I want to talk to you about that. Will you come back on in the future?
I'd love to, man. Let's stay in touch. Send me a note. I'll send Focus on the Good Stuff to you. We can have another conversation about that, because that's a whole other conversation we can have about parenting and teens and kids and everything in terms of really infusing gratitude and appreciation into the family.
Absolutely. Again, thank you, and everybody have a great week. We are out of here. Let me hit the button.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.